In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we continue to talk to artists who draw the bat, specifically Francesco Francavilla, who's been one of the two great artists that Scott Snyder's had the pleasure of working with in recent months. Now, we're enjoying his jock story right now, but everybody was blown away by that amazing Commissioner Gordon and Son of Commissioner Gordon story that is in the works at Detective under the artistic hands of Francesco Francavilla. A lot of callbacks to other classic Batman stories. And finally, since Batman Year One, a few questions are answered about the mysterious son of Commissioner Gordon. We also talk about his run on Black Panther with David Liss. That's been an amazing story, watching T'Challa working the Daredevil route of the former Hell's Kitchen, Clinton, New York. You know, it's kind of fitting that we're releasing this so close to Heroes Con, because it was just a year ago at Heroes Con that Francesco got both gigs at Marvel and DC. I'll let him explain that in the interview. We also talk about his Western story in Image Comics Outlaw Territory, Volume 2, his work for Dynamite on the Zorro series with Matt Wagner, and the covers for the Lone Ranger Zorro crossover that's currently going on. And he's got a story in the Jim Henson Storytellers anthology from Archaea that's coming out later this year. Francesco also talks about the comic art studios of Italy and how they're able to do monthly comics that are 96 pages per issue. Plus, we discuss Francavilla's website, Pulp Sunday, featuring more web sketches and web comics and lobby card designs, plus his contributions to the artist blog Comic Twart. Make sure you check out his amazing stuff at francescofrancavilla.com and at Pulp Sunday. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by Word Balloon and the Word Balloon t-shirt. Now, we've talked about it before on the show. We've got sizes from small to 5X, so they're just $20. All the details are at our website, wordballoon.com. Feel free and pick up a Word Balloon t-shirt via PayPal at wordballoon.com. First, I want to talk about Detective and again congratulate you and Scott for such an incredible story. I'm almost glad that they moved it to the main feature, because taking nothing away from the story that Scott was telling with Jock, I just think there was a lot of interest in Jim Gordon and his son going back to Batman Year One and everyone wondering what happened to this child.
Yes, thank you for enjoying the read. Definitely, that's, I would call, one of my favorite books that I've drawn in my career. And definitely the book that, you know, if I had to pick one book to put in my luggage on the desert island, you know, that would be it. So the thing is that that specific issue, 875, was all along planned to be as a standard, as a full issue. It wasn't part of the backup original part.
It's an incredible book, and, you know, as we were setting up to record, I told you earlier, I feel there's a lot of subtext in Scott's story, and that you have to carry a lot of the emotion in the art, both from a color standpoint and just the drawing, because there's a lot of emotions that aren't being expressed, both the fear of Jim Gordon's part and whatever psychotic thoughts his son is having during these same conversations.
Right, that's our, like I was mentioning earlier, it's a labor of love. Me and Scott have been talking a lot on the phone back and forward about the story, and, you know, we just want to make the best story that we can. So there was a lot of this creepy feeling going on about if James is really this psychopath killer, or it's just, you know, a victim of a series of circumstances. And I think we kind of nailed that ambiguity, because I'm reading from several reviews that people think that the Peter Pan killer may actually kill, you know, Barbara's friend. So I'm not going to say yes he did or he did not, but just that the fact that people is taking these two different positions is what we wanted. So,
did you color the story as well?
Yes, I did. Man. I've been coloring all my work in the last 2 years, I believe. So,
I thought so, given what I've seen both at your blog and all the other places that you worked. I mean, the coloring does seem consistent. And that's the thing. I think that as much as you're, you know, drawing, I think the color is really, you know, carrying a lot of the emotional pull in this story.
Yeah, I start coloring probably with the Third Act of Zorro that I did with Matt Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, you know, I always say that if I'm going to color my work, I'm going to use the color as a storytelling element, because it's not, I'm not much for literally coloring, you know. So I use the color just to accentuate the feeling and or some tension or the fear, the danger. You know, I try to express those moments also through colors as well as, you know, the visuals of the land work.
Wonderful. Well, it shows, and I think to great effect. You know, you can tell that James Gordon looks like his father, but it's, you know, did you have any models in mind for what his son would look like?
No, I didn't. I mean, once again, there was a lot of talking us on the phone with Scott about, you know, what kind of look we were supposed to give to him. And Scott was insisting in having him to be, I mean, as normal looking, or you know, almost like someone that you see in the street and you wouldn't even notice. So I'm very average, maybe a slightly even boring guy. And I think the idea of the glasses was mine, because I said, you know, I can get some the glasses, make almost like it was a bit recalling his dad glasses, and also to make life more like, again, more a normal guy, you know, someone that you wouldn't think to be a killer or,
sure,
or something. And or something that someone dangerous. And I play a bit the Black Mirror theme that Scott was bringing in his first art. In the diner scene, where you pretty much look like Gordon is looking at the mirror image of himself, but, you know, a younger himself, but not quite with the same goodness that Gordon has, you know. So he's a black mirror, so maybe that's everything that Gordon is not, you know, it's on the other side of the mirror.
No, I understand you. I'm looking at the magazine now. There's that great scene right at the beginning where Gordon is standing on the bridge, and you can't help but think. And I want to ask about your process with Scott, because it's pretty obvious, I think, to longtime Batman fans, that's that same bridge where Batman saved Jim, the child, back in that first Batman Year One story.
Right. Yeah, it was. We've been trying to give a little hint to what is, you know, the origin story that we are in a certain way tributing here. So the bridge was important. It's also in later on in the double spread with Gordon driving, and, you know, remembering some of the moments of James Jr. And his caption, they say, I don't know if he was the fool, you know. Here, so there is another connection to Batman Year One, when the baby fell from the bridge.
Yeah.
Another Easter egg that kind of I threw in, and Scott didn't even know about it. It was a little surprise to him as well. He's having Junior dressed as, I mean, Junior dressed as a Joker. That was in the script. But I kind of went with the colors of The Killing Joke.
Oh, great. Yeah,
you know,
I'm looking at it now. Absolutely. That's awesome.
So that was a bit of the costume that the Joker is in, will dress later in The Killing Joke.
That's terrific.
Make a little more, yeah.
No, that's terrific. Well, and, you know, it's... I also, and you know, this might be a question too for Scott, but I'm going to ask you, Gordon standing on that bridge, it almost seems like that's the last time that he really felt he connected with his son. Because I really think there's a great psychology going on in Commissioner Gordon where he regrets that his marriage, his first marriage ended. And I think in those scenes with even, you know, when James Jr. is visiting, you can kind of tell that, if anything, he represents that failed marriage. And it probably pushes his ability to connect with his son even further away. And it's almost that he, you know, maybe his job took him away from his son in the beginning. And it's reinforced now that he's divorced, that his son is even further away from him. And he still doesn't understand this kid. And that must be, you just kind of feel that frustration, I think, throughout the story with Commissioner Gordon, with his son.
Yeah, I mean, again, if eventually you had a chance to set up an interview with Scott, he would go in more detail about all the background of this story. But we were trying to give that the feeling of, I mean, he failed, you know.
Yes.
With his son.
Yeah.
He did turn out what he wanted to be, and we were trying to get this kind of feeling also through the book, and I think he kind of showed. So I guess he worked with it.
Well, it's terrific, man. Now, when do you get back to Detective? When is your next issue?
I will be back again. This full issue were planned all along before even there was the 20 pages deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I was supposed to do like short backups, and then there were this full issue where Scott was planning to evolve this story side by side, because eventually the whole thing comes together. So at the end of the first year of this new Detective run, everything will come together. Also, the Gordon story that is, it may seem that is developing on its own, it still has tie-in with the Batman story in the main feature. So now we will have a new arc, which is Angry City, with Jock back on the book, and it will be on for 876, 877, and 878. And I'll be back on 879.
Okay.
And then Jock will do 880, and then it will be 881 will be me and Jock together. It will be an extra large issue.
Wow. Okay. That's great.
Where everything will be wrapped up.
I see. Okay. That's cool. Well, that's great. And again, taking nothing away from Jock's work, I mean, he's a beautiful artist as well.
He's talented.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. I think Scott's very lucky to have both of you on this book. That's pretty terrific. I mean, it's such a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. I think also sometimes, you know, I read that people say, Scott is lucky that DC gave him these two guys. Scott actually picked us up, you know, he wanted us, and I like that DC was okay in giving us, you know, assigning us to this book, because it's like now it's a big family.
That's terrific.
Me, Jock, David Baron, and Mastermind Scott, so...
That's
I have to say, it has been a real pleasure to work with all the Batman editorial, you know, from Mike Mars to Jenna Laslin and newcomer Katie Kubert. I mean, it's a real pleasure working on this book. From every point of view you want to see it, you know, from the creative, from the administrative, I mean... Anytime you see it, it's all good.
That's terrific. Well, going to your blog and seeing the times that you've drawn Batman, both in period pieces and also modern sketches and stuff, you were I'm glad that the bat office was able to get you and that you have time in your schedule. And then also on Marvel's side, seeing you work on the Black Panther as well. I mean, it's terrific. And, it, you know, am I remembering wrong, Francesco? Because I remember seeing sketches, and maybe it was early pages of your work on Black Panther, but I thought I saw some similar page breakdowns before you started working on Black Panther with a different character. Am I wrong about that? Maybe I saw early Panther pages. I'm not sure.
No, I mean, Black Panther is set in a very kind of noir urban environment.
Absolutely.
Which is a little similar, you know, to what I was doing with My Black Beetle.
Okay.
My Peter on a Black Beetle. And actually, I mean, I'm having a blast also drawing the book at Marvel. David Lees, it is a pleasure to work with, and Bill Rosman, my editor, who is the one that pretty much found me on the convention floor of HeroesCon last year. He was walking by and he stopped and he saw the Black Beetle Ashken. And he fell in love with my artwork. So that's how I got, you know, the Black Panther geek.
Terrific.
It was actually thanks to Black Beetle. And the weird thing was that pretty much after that, within a week, you know, the Marvel and DC knocking to my door pretty much at the same time.
Oh,
when Marvel asked me to do the ongoing on Black Panther, I said, oh, heck yeah, I'm in. And I was pretty happy. And then DC, Scott, you know, asked me, say, would you be interested in working on Detective? I said, okay.
Wow.
Is this real or is a joke? So, I mean, yeah, I feel very blessed. Within a week, I got both gigs. I'm killing myself. I don't remember drawing as many pages as I have in the last few months, but it's a pleasure. It's all good, you know?
I do, and it's funny because I've been trying to get you to come on an interview, and you've been telling me every week, you're like, I've got so many pages I've got to do, and you told me how busy March was in particular, all the pages you had to get in, and what a crazy month March was, plus a couple conventions in there, too.
Well, yeah, I had to cancel one just because of that one.
There you go.
Seattle. Yeah, it was kind of a bummer because I love the show, I love the people, I love to go to Seattle, but 5 days off this period would have put me in a really bad spot. So
I understand.
That's cancel. But yeah, I mean, as a matter of fact, it's not that I'm off the hook now. I still have deadline. But I was feeling bad that I would keep delaying these interviews. I said, oh, let's do it, and I'd just take an hour off to sleep tonight, and everything would be good.
Oh, there you go. Well, then I won't feel too bad. Nice. All right. No.
No worry.
Well, I appreciate it. And I, like I said before we started, this is going to be a shorty, but we'll do a long one when there's a better break and you have more time to talk, and we'll get going. But I wanted to, I'm glad that both DC and Marvel kind of wised up last year. And I know you had your Wildstorm Garrison miniseries last year as well, but I can't believe it's taken this long for the big two to kind of wake up to you, Francesco, because I remember reading those Black Coat issues, you know, now it's 5 years ago when you were doing those with Ben Licious. And that's the first time. It's funny. I think all the podcasting community kind of became aware of you back in 2005 or 2006 when you were doing Black Coat.
Right.
And we're all like, who is this guy? And my God, you came, you know, this was your first American work, right, back then?
Yeah, that was the first one, and I mean, I think at the same time I did also, right after, I did Free Agent.
Yes.
With Rick Remender.
Of course.
And we did the Sorrow Mini with Rick Remender Setback, the horror mini image, And then, you know, I guess the very first book that kept me a little more, let's say more high-profile gig was the Zorro book with the Mann Wagner and
Absolutely.
Dynamite.
Oh, yeah. Was your Zorro, was there an Italian artist that did Zorro, or did you read Alex Toth? Because it felt very Alex Toth-like in a good way. I mean, it's certainly your style, but I don't know, just the way, I think the way you also use kind of negative space and stuff in a similar way, it just kind of felt a little Tothian to me.
Well, I mean, the thing is that the Italian school is all about black and white. You know,
sure.
I grew up with lots of, I mean, 95% of all the books I was reading were all black and white, that strong black and white, like Alex Stoddard or Alex Raymond, you know, mm-hmm. Williamson, those guys.
Kubrick. Sure. Yeah, Joe Kubrick.
So yeah, I mean, I read some of the top Zorro. I read everything that he did on Zorro. I read some of, probably now, hope I'm pronouncing the name right. Yeats? Yeah, one of the Zorro artists.
Oh, okay.
Thomas Yeats?
Yeah, Tom Yeats, absolutely. Yes, indeed, of course.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I was more on that classic, you know, style look for Zorro when I came on board. I was going to try something more complicated in terms like, you know, cross-hatching, and Matt said, no, no, I like your more graphic black and white, so I kept a little simpler. So
that's great, man. No, I loved your Zorro stuff too with Matt. I think it's terrific, and also I'm glad you do color your own stuff, because you retain that kind of feeling of negative space even though the stuff is colored, and there's that, you can't help but feel the black and whites, the colors don't intrude on your illustration, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I use actually, in some cases, I use the color as a ink as well. Like, you know, some line work is done with color as well. So it's knowing that I'm coloring myself makes the final page more cohesive.
Sure.
Because when I pencil, I leave stuff out that I know I'm going to complete in the inking stage. And when I ink, I leave stuff out that I know I'm going to complete with the colors. So it's like the whole thing comes together.
I want to go back to Black Panther, because I love the design for his city costume versus his traditional kind of more spandex look. I mean, this is more body armor. And obviously, I guess he needs it because he doesn't have maybe the superpowers that he does when he has the Panther spirit. But that's
right.
I like that. I think it's it makes for more of an urban kind of vigilante look, and it really does fit the alleys and the streets that he's currently fighting in.
Yeah, that was the plan all along, to have him. He's clearly more vulnerable.
Sure.
So he needs to protect himself. So that he has this bulletproof vest. Because he can get shot, and actually during his fight with Vlad, he gets hurt quite often. So we want to make sure that he's bleeding, you know, that his costume is sterile.
Sure.
So I think that helps to relate more. To the hero versus someone that is, you know, invincible. So the reader doesn't connect much as someone say, oh, well, he's as beaten like I would, you know.
No, it's great.
And since the friends have a bit, you know, the time to adjust to the new status, but they seem to enjoy it.
Well, you know, I always liked when Christopher Priest was writing Black Panther, and it was near the end of his last run at Marvel when he gave the costume, when T'Challa gave the costume to, and I'm forgetting his name, but another character, and they made the character an urban character. And I can't. I can't remember his...
Casper Cole?
Yes, exactly, Casper Cole. I think eventually they made him in Chris Priest's Crew miniseries. They gave him a white tiger kind of costume or something like that. But yeah, I like those Casper Cole stories, exactly. And I think T'Challa in this urban setting kind of fits that. I imagine eventually he's going to have to go back to the jungle, but I almost wish this would continue. I hope it continues as long as it can with you and David doing this story, because as much as I like the jungle stories, it's fun to see the Panther in this setting.
Well, I mean, I'm working now on 518. 517 will be out next week. I was on 515. 516 has Jeff Palo as a guest artist.
Yes.
That's something that, you know, was planned all along.
Oh, okay.
I think Marvel likes to give a little break to, you know, going regular artists. I also probably make sure that, you know, all the books are coming out regularly.
Sure.
So there are some breaks that are built in. So I know people saying, oh, Francesco took a break to do the detective, but no, that's not the case.
Okay. Well, very good.
It was just a coincidence, but yes, I'm back on 517 next week, and I'm finishing up 518 this week and Tom Eddy. Then 519 and 520 will have Jeff again. It's like a mini arc with Craven and Storm. So all the fans will be happy to see that the wife is in town. Storm is coming to town. And I know that them Easter, so and I'll be back on 521 and on, and they already have the script. So I guess we can say safely, Charles is going to stay in New York for a while.
Terrific.
I'm not sure how long, but it's going to be for a while.
Very good. That's excellent. No, I like it. Well, you know, and it's kind of like when they put Hercules in Incredible Hulk. And it was like, oh, you know, I mean, you miss the Hulk, but it's like, wait a minute, this is going good, and I like what I'm reading here. We don't want this to necessarily go away. I just spoke to Ed Brubaker about that with Captain America and Bucky taking over the identity.
And, yeah, I was listening to him.
You know, yeah, and all of a sudden readers are like, wait a minute, don't get away from this all of a sudden. This is a good idea. Let this play out for a while. So I'm glad to hear that T'Challa will stay in New York. But it'll be fun to see Storm come in and have her, drop her into this setting as well, other than the times that he's talking to her on his laptop, obviously.
Well, I mean, it's a big city, so I think there's room for quite a few people and superheroes to stay in New York. As a matter of fact, I think Daredevil will be back soon as well.
So, who else?
Matt Murdock.
Daredevil. Okay, I couldn't understand you saying Daredevil. That's all right, man. No, we're doing good. I think I'm doing all right. I'm you know, usually I'm pretty good with accents and everything. Very good.
Yeah, we forgot to say that show will be closed captioned on page 777 of our fanboy. Due to my Italian accent and, you know, cold and no stuff.
No, man. I'm Greek, so I'm just across. I'm just across the water. That's all right. I should be able to pick this up better.
I understand I do have an accent, so but people find it interesting. You know, you haven't turned. A cool accent. So
absolutely, it's a cool accent.
My wife keeps saying, "Oh, don't lose it, please."
Absolutely, no, it's a good accent. I no, that's that good international flavor. There's nothing wrong with that. Very cosmopolitan. I like.
There
it.
You go.
I want to ask about your blog because I don't know how. I'm assuming you do these as warm-ups for pages or whatever, but every week. You put out these amazing on Pulp Sunday. You've got your stories that are coming out, your regular features. Both you've got Black Beetle, and then what else? What else is you're illustrating a Dashiell Hammett story as well?
Oh yeah, the Nightmare Town, which I need to get back to it. I mean, the blog is Pulp Sunday, which is pulpsunday.blogspot.com. And I started like a few years ago, probably it was like 2006, I believe. And I was featuring those Shadow episodes every Sunday, the radio show.
Yes.
And I was drawing a little lobby card to go with, so people tune in, listen to the show, and look at some pretty pictures. You know, it was a more kind of entertaining kind of thing done for fun. And the thing is that the blog has grown since then to be one of the favorites of the pulp and noir, and pretty much everything that is kind of, I guess, old school. You know, it doesn't need to be the fedora gangster, or it can be sci-fi, it can be horror. So that's all. These are all genres that are favorites of mine, and I just have fun drawing that kind of stuff. And when I have fun drawing, it doesn't really require much time or effort to me. I managed to find time to update regularly with new art. Actually, sometimes I spend more time doing a little write-up to go with than doing the artwork itself, you know? It takes longer just to do the HTML post and all the tags and stuff.
I believe it.
But for me it's fun, it's refreshing, and I use that as a break, yes. My break from work, which is drawing comics, is drawing something else. I mean,
okay.
So I take a break from drawing by drawing.
Yeah, but that, I guess that's why you stay so good, because, man, I got to tell you, the movie posters that you did, that Spencer Tracy was fantastic. I was losing my mind looking at it the other night and how beautiful that turned out. And the Sean Connery and the Daniel Craig James Bond movie posters are just incredible.
Oh, no, yeah.
Cards. Great ideas and really beautiful.
I wish we can go back to the artwork as a movie poster. Now they use photographs.
Yes. No, I agree.
Maybe a little blank.
Yeah, and think of the great artists that did, great comic book artists, like Frazetta had all of those wonderful mid-60s art movie posters that he made. You know,
Frazetta, and we were watching the other day Casino Royale, which was the original movie.
Yes, David Niven.
David Niven, yes. And I remember the poster was by Frazetta.
That's right. And also, I remember the Peter Sellers movie that he made in Italy called After the Fox. And I know that one was a Frazetta poster as well. So that's funny. I was watching that Casino Royale with David Niven the other night too. That's one of my favorite 60s movies. It's silly, but all the stars that are in it and the way that they used to shoot movies back then, you know, they don't make movies like that anymore.
No, they don't. But I think it was on BBC America or something.
Yes, yes. I was watching.
And my wife was saying, this is nothing like the, you know, the new Casino Royale. I said, yes. Are you sure it's a Bond movie? I said, yes, it's a Bond movie. It qualifies as a James Bond movie.
That's right. No, it was. It's fun. Well, Woody Allen and everybody in it. My God, all star cast.
Right,
Orson Welles.
I think they had like a big budget for the movie.
Oh yeah, and
I'm not sure if they.
You go ahead.
Not sure if they made the money back though.
Yeah, well, and I think it was like a couple different directors, because I know John Huston directed some scenes. And
right.
I can't remember who the other directors were, but John Huston played M, and Orson Welles played Le Chiff. In the film, the great Baccarat scene that he and Peter Sellers have. No, it's a cool, it's, you know, I mean, definitely a 60s pop movie, but that's why it's kind of like a time capsule of what, you know, the mod scene was kind of like back then.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, that's why I kind of enjoy doing this old school stuff. It's kind of a throwback to those times, you know, 60s. And you go back to the 20s and everything in between, you know?
Yes. Well, I see your influences of paperback covers and, as we said, lobby cards and My God, that Batman 1930s thing, that looks like an advertisement out of a 1930s kind of magazine, the way that you've got the Batmobile and Batman all lined up in that little kind of sepia-looking print.
Yes, yeah. And this kind of stuff that that is the reason why Mike Mignola asked me to do those variant covers. Because he wanted this kind of retro, almost golden age, you know, paperback book looking cover.
Sure. That's cool. Well, and yeah, tell me about your cover work, because you've been doing a lot along with your interior work. You know, you've continued to do cover work for Green Hornet and Sherlock Holmes Year One. I've been looking at those and enjoying those very much. And did you do Lone Ranger and Zorro, the Death of Zorro story? Aren't you doing the covers for that?
Yes, I'm doing the cover for the mini. Lone Ranger, which is a Lone Ranger mini. Zorro appears in the first issue, but it's an old Zorro, you know, he's in his 60s, and unfortunately he will die in the first issue.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the book is out. I hope I'm not spoiling you or anything.
Oh, no, the book's out. You're right. We're okay.
But, actually it's been kind of a cool experience to come up with covers that showcase both characters, but also knowing that Zorro is pretty much that in the first issue. So I can't really show them, riding together, because it's not going to happen in the book.
Right. Nice.
So I had to come up with some really interesting composition. I don't know if you've seen the latest one, where it's almost like an M.C. Escher kind of cover, where the Lone Ranger blend in Zorro. They're both riding horses.
No, I haven't seen that one yet. What number is that? Which issue?
That's the cover for issue 4. It's on the first page of my Pop Sunday blog, if you scroll down a bit.
I'm going to take a look for it now.
I've been doing all the Green Hornet Year 1 covers, alternate covers, with Matt Wagner. And doing the covers for Cato Origins, now for Sherlock Holmes Year One. I've been doing the covers of my detective books. I just did a cover for a new Image series that's coming up, sometime this summer. By Nate Cosby and Ben McCool. Well, just announced at the WonderCon. It's called Pigs, and it's about a sleeper cell, Soviet sleeper cell in Cuba that is going to mess up with the U.S. government. So
cool.
I have a very simple, it's like a simple synopsis I read on Twitter. I don't have many details.
But, that sounds neat, though.
I did a cover for issue 2 on that book, so I like doing covers. It's for me, it's fun, you know. It's a nice break. So the sequential page requires a whole different mental approach. You are telling a story, which may require, you know, 2 panels, 5 panels, 9 panels. So it's like doing the layout, orchestrating the action, make sure that everything flows. With a cover, it's a single image. I still like to tell a story with one image, but it's a little easy on my brain anyway.
So. Okay. No, I understand. Well, again, you succeed in both ideas, both interiors and covers. Great, great images, and I've loved the Sherlock Holmes ones that you've done as well. And I look forward to this work on Pigs. I'm a big fan of espionage, so it sounds like, you know, it sounds like a good kind of Soviet like you say, they're sleeper agents, so maybe these are former Soviets. It sounds like it'll be a fun spy story.
Yeah, actually, I worked on that. Was my one of the early creator on the book Left on Mission.
Yes, I loved Left on Mission. Chip Mosier's book. Sure.
Yeah, that was a bit of this kind of genre, you know, with the Cuba and.
Oh yeah.
Several location and spies and that kind of stuff.
Very cool. And I have to acknowledge your work on Outlawed Territory, the second volume. I don't know if you had one in the first volume, but I know you had a good Western story in that second volume that you wrote and drew.
Yes, it's titled Lullaby, and I was in the first anthology. I was invited by Michael Wood to be part of the second one, and, I like to do these short stories for anthology, where I usually also take care of the writing as well. I think I did a couple for 24/7, and now I can recall. I have other anthologies with short stories, but it's for me a little fun exercise to come up with a short story. Which, by the way. It's not easy, to do a short story because you have less pages to tell a story.
Well, I wanted to ask about that. Go ahead and finish, and then I'll ask. You go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, usually, the longer, the more pages you have, you can better develop a story. When you have less pages, you really need to grab the attention and have the reader care within a few pages, like, 4, 5, 6 pages. So it's tougher, but it can be done,
I wondered if, because the few Italian comics that I've seen, they came out weekly, and kind of like some of the British comics I've seen, they were told in 4 or 6 page chapters. And did you have to draw that way in Italy before, getting the chance to tell longer stories, over here?
No, I mean, not sure which one are these comics you're referring.
I'm thinking Diabolique, and maybe I'm wrong, but I if I remember correctly, the few Diabolique stories that I saw from maybe the 60s or the 70s, if I remember correctly, they were shorter.
No, they are the Italian average format is kind of digest, and they are 96 pages at least, or longer.
And
there are books that are 150 pages.
Okay, and it's all the same story? They're not a bunch of different stories altogether? Like an anthology?
No, it's like the monthly is a 96 pages book.
Wow.
Now, for this reason, I mean, there is no artist that can draw 96 pages in one poem. it's not going to happen. The thing is that they are black and white, so
yes.
There is no coloring stage to add, to the timing and everything.
Sure.
But they have rotating artists on the same character. For example, Tex Willer, the Western.
Yes, I'm a big fan.
They will have like a couple of writers and 10 artists.
Okay.
So someone is assigning the book, and then another at the same time someone else is drawing already the following issue. At the same time, someone is already drawing the other issue. So you know that we'll have books coming out every month,
Okay.
Everyone will have time to draw his own story.
I see.
So you're never going to have the same artist drawing 2 following issues because that will take 6 months.
Sure, sure. Well, did you work in a studio system like that in Italy? Would we know any of, is there printed Italian versions of your Italian work?
I didn't technically work in a studio. I was attempting a studio, almost like a workshop, because I don't have any formal art training.
Crazy. Really? Wow.
Really, I've never done any kind of art school or anything. I've been doing comics since I was a kid. Of course, you know, your family and friends will say, oh, this is great, this is awesome. But I knew that I needed to have a professional opinion.
Certainly.
To make really sure, you know, if I need to improve on some things. And as a matter of fact, you know, going to Italian conventions, showing my work around, I start to have, you know, a very specific feedback, like, oh, the clothing here looks off, or this thing looks weird. So, you know, that there are some areas that you need to improve. And then for a summer, because I won this contest, you know, the comic book contest, I got in touch with a bunch of artists that work for Bonelli that live like 30 minutes from where I live, where I was used to live in Italy. So I was used to go, you know, once a week to go to their studio, just hang around and see what tools they were using. And actually, they had like a free table, so I was sitting there drawing, and they were giving me some feedback. And that's what has been a bit of, again, a kind of a gym, you know, workshop. And then I started to publish a few things in Italy, but mostly were small publications. So, you know, not much money involved. And it is that stage of your life where you actually looking for a salary.
Sure.
You're bringing you some money, you know.
Yeah.
So I started to work more on the graphic industry, doing logo design and all kinds of stuff like typography, T-shirts, that kind of work. And that's actually, if you think about it, it all comes together now, because when I do those posters, I like to pack, you know, my own, I handwrite the title and the logo and, you know, this all compositions, not just the artwork, but it's also a good dose of design
Absolutely.
Work that goes in.
Sure.
Which comes from the past, you know?
That's terrific. And that, like you say, that helps to complete the package, and it's all your own work. And it definitely shows in these lobby cards and these poster ideas that you do, because it's terrific from the graphics right down to the illustration. It's beautiful stuff. That makes sense. That's really neat, man. Wow. You're pretty talented. Let me state the obvious. That's fantastic, man. Not to have a formal education for the art and everything. Your style is incredible. And obviously, you know everybody that, like I said, the entire podcast community 5 years ago was saying this, and your art has only improved since then. So congratulations. It's wonderful stuff.
Well, thank you. That reminds me when I asked Dynamite, you know, to color my own Zorro, the third art, say, can I color... And they, you know, they said, can you do it? I said, yeah, I think I can do it. And when they started to see the first pages coming in, Matt was all happy, you know, to see my colors. And Joe Ryan of Dynamite said, you are, you know, a VP of the word F, Renaissance man. So whatever you want to do, you know, apparently you look like you managed to be successful.
That's fantastic.
I want to try sculpting next.
That's cool. That would be great. Do you really want to try that?
I think I may be good at it.
That's fantastic.
I have a feeling.
Do you know, and I'm not sure if you've met him, Ruben Procopio?
Oh, he's a dear friend of mine, yeah.
Okay, because, you know, I know, I maybe it was at that same FX show that we were at in Orlando, but I remember meeting Ruben. And he was drawing Green Hornet and making, you know, he's a sculptor. For people who don't know, he's
right,
a guy.
Yeah.
And he's worked in animation as well. He used to work for Disney back in the day.
Right.
And yeah, that's I think it might have been the same FX show that I met both of you. And yeah, he's an amazing sculptor and stuff. And I'm always pleased to see sculptors who, you know, obviously they do their sketches before they actually commit to you know, making something out of clay or plastic or resin, whatever they use to make their sculptures. And yeah, so I can, you've got that kind of eye, so it'd be pretty interesting to see if you can go to that kind of 3D art and really make something like, you know, like a statue like that. That'd be really cool.
I found something back in the days when I was in Italy. I was making my own costumes for, I would say Halloween. We celebrate Carnival in Italy. It's like, okay, you know, Mardi Gras in New Orleans. So I was making my own costume, and I sculpted Jason Voorhees, you know, Friday the 13th hockey mask.
Yes.
I did that. I actually sculpted with the, you know, skull piece, was, and they painted, you know, with the blood and everything. It came out pretty realistic. And I did the Freddy Krueger face, you know, the old barn, and then, and turned out pretty good. And I also did the glove with actual blades,
wow,
which I had to put some tape on because people were afraid that I was going to slice someone. And I remember I was at this festival in Rome. It was like a horror movie festival. And everyone was wearing the Freddy Krueger glove that you buy at the store, which is plastic, you know? And I brought my one, the one that was made in the basement, with an actual electrical, you know, kind of worker glove, and again, I stitched these blades on top of it, and people were kind of throwing away their glove for saying, okay, this looks like a toy, you know, versus
what you had.
Yeah, but I had the real thing.
That's fantastic, man. I now, you do so much for Comic Twark too, and I got to tell you, I think it was the Metal Men that you did a couple weeks ago that really knocked me out, in particular. But like Chris Somney and so many others, Tom Fowler and all of the guys, Ron Salas, there's a lot of really good artists over at Comic Twart every week. And I like how you guys challenge each other with coming up with a character and then seeing all of your interpretations of those characters. But yeah, it was that Doom Patrol that you did. And I thought it looked beautiful. Again, it looked like a poster or a cover, you know, that kind of, it looked like a movie poster.
Oh, yeah,
almost.
Yeah. Again, like I was mentioning earlier, I like to try to tell as much as I can. Sometimes, you know, I'm so short on time that I just do a bust, you know, and call it a day. But if I have time, I like to tell a story. So the poster, it will make you think about, you know, what this movie is about. You know, the who killed the professor.
That's...
Yeah, you know, it's like people start to build on that, and
sure.
They become, you know, the piece of art become interactive in a certain way. It's not just something that you just look at. But yeah, that's those are some really cool characters. I was reading the showcase that DC put out of Doom Patrol, and oh my! I mean, it looks like you can find all kind of characters in those stories.
You
know,
bet.
Like whatever you come up with today, oh, it has to be done already.
I know what you mean. Absolutely. No, really interesting ideas in those Bruno Primiani, you know, art. And it was it Arnold Drake, I guess, who was writing the Doom Patrol back then.
Right.
So really neat stuff. Now, you know, I want to mention that people can buy your Black Beetle. You've come up with a comic, and it's you're selling it on your website, correct?
Well, I did an Ashken, and, you know, my mistake was to make a limited run because I ran out. I was expecting that I was going to sell out of those, but apparently I did.
Oh, you have sold out.
Good.
Okay.
Yes, I am. I may have like a few, like maybe 3-4 copies remaining. I need to check the inventory. But I am pretty much sold out. So what I was thinking now is to actually put in the new comic, and possibly if I manage to do it for EOSCON. So I will have, you know, probably another larger round. I mean, eventually my ultimate goal is to but Black Beetle through a publisher, And I already have at least two or three minis plotted, so ready to go. And one of them I already started working on pages. So I like to have, for Heroes Zone, I like to have a kind of boss account, which is a kind of a one-shot of the Black Beetle, explaining a bit some of his origins. You know, I will have a bit of a year one kind of feeling. So
understood. Well, I hope it comes out by time of HeroesCon. And also another project you've got coming up, you're working on with something for Arkea, and that's that Jim Henson Storytellers?
Yeah, they just announced that they're doing an anthology inspired by the Jim Henson Storytellers. So it will be like old short tales about, you know, legends, folklore, and that kind of stuff. I'm doing a short story in that anthology, writing and illustrating it. And as well, I'm doing a short story for another anthology that Tarka is doing, edited by Nate Cosby as for the storyteller. This anthology is about the Immortals. It's a movie that's coming out soon.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be about the Greek mythology.
Oh, fantastic.
And but that those are, you know, short stories. What I have in the work is another creator-owned mini at DC Comics.
Great.
That hasn't been announced yet.
Okay.
There's going to be a six-issue mini, and sadly I can't tell more than that because it hasn't been announced yet.
Okay.
And there are a few other things that, for each thing that gets announced, there are two things that are behind unannounced, you know? they keep coming.
That's great. Well, will you be
keep me busy, you know?
Will you be in San Diego?
Not 100% sure yet.
Oh, you're not 100% sure yet. Okay. Well, I don't know if I'm going to make it to HeroesCon, unfortunately, but I am going to be in San Diego, so I hope to see you soon. But regardless, I'm going to get you back on the phone, and we'll, when the DC announcement is made, we can maybe talk a little bit more about that project and follow up on where things are in Detective and Panther and everywhere else.
Yeah, definitely. In the next few months, there are going to be at least a couple of big announcements, so we can talk more.
Okay, excellent, man. Hey, I've taken you much longer. I expected only a half hour, and we're closing in on an hour here. So I want to I'll let you get to dinner. And I want you to feel better, and also because I know you got a pound of work waiting for you too. So, but
yeah, those pages I'm not drawing by themselves. Sadly, okay. I wish they do, but they don't.
Too bad.
Sometimes, you know, I leave the board at the pencil on the drawing table, and leave the room, and hope, you know, when I come back that things are already drawn, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, the magic elves aren't helping you. I'm sorry, man. That's not good.
Maybe I'm using the wrong book or something. I don't know.
Well, thank you very much. And seriously, nice going. Keep it up, because we're all loving what you're doing. And I'm glad that the bigger books are coming your way, and the opportunities to draw, you know, the bigger characters are coming your way as well, because whether it is, like I said, the smaller publishers that you've worked with, and some of the ideas like Garrison and stuff, it's always entertaining and beautifully drawn by Francesco Francavilla. So again, thank you for talking today, and I hope we could do it again very soon.
Oh, thank you, John, for having me on the show, and, you know, for being supportive. I know you guys have been fans since, you know, 2005, whatever.
You bet.
Or 2006, I don't even remember. It seems like a long time ago, but it actually isn't. So I really appreciate all the support, and I love that you got the show all the way.
Thank you.
That's Francesco Francavilla. Looking forward to more of his work in Detective and Black Panther. and all the other places we've discussed. He's got the great story coming up from Arkea in the Jim Henson Storytellers Anthology, plus his continued work for Dynamite on the Zorro series with Matt Wagner, and currently doing those great covers for Dynamite on things like Sherlock Holmes Year One and the Zorro Lone Ranger crossover. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress saying thanks, and reminding you that Word Balloon comes out at the very least weekly. You can find our shows at iFanboy, but also at wordballoon.com, where we've got our full archive of, we're closing in on 400 fine interviews of great comic book artists, creators, animators, actors, screenwriters, directors, you name it, they're all waiting for you at wordballoon.com. Questions or comments about the show, reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Follow me at Twitter under John Wordballoon, or you can follow me on Facebook under my name, John Suntress. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2011.